Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, I'm doing great. Actually excited about this game for random reasons because it's kind of a weird, unique game, but it's a big one for Arkansas, there's no doubt. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I will say this, though. One thing I have appreciated about Hogs fans, it doesn't seem like there's an insane amount of gloating or arrogance about this matchup, even though it's against a group of six, right? It feels like you guys have been dreading this matchup since it was put on the schedule. Like that's the sense I get. Even though you have some confidence about winning the ball game, doesn't feel like there's a lot of people out there that are gloating and ready to just immediately chalk this up as a W.
Yeah. No, I mean it's a weird thing because I think most Razorback fans are pretty upset that this game is even happening. Not that it's against Memphis, but that it's on the road against Memphis.
Right.
Who decided this? And it's something to where Arkansas fans, especially, they're no stranger to the Liberty Bowl since they played in quite a few of them. I think it's been three over the last 10 years now. And so it's something to where, Razorback fans, they're not very confident about much right now. They haven't been very confident about Sam Pittman, confident about anything, but they do at least feel like this is a game that, they can win, they should win, and if they don't win, it's going to be major, major problems for the rest of the schedule, especially ahead.
But I'll say this as an alum of the University of Memphis and the football program, I appreciate the Hogs for scheduling this game. I appreciate it. Yeah. We don't get a lot of this anymore. There's not a lot of power fours lining up at the door to play Memphis. Now, I did see this last night on Inside Arkansas. You guys did your EA College Football 26 simulation, Memphis and Arkansas, and it was one of the most hilarious endings I've ever seen. Now, Arkansas ended up winning 28-26 in it with a late score, but Memphis drives down, gets into field goal range, takes their last time out, and lets the clock run out. The clock management from Ryan Silverfield, let's hope that doesn't come to reality in real life.
Yeah, that was a battle of coaching malpractice between Arkansas and Sam and Memphis because Sam Pittman there, Arkansas scores the go-ahead touchdown and they have a one-point lead. And, in that case, it's like, hey, you need to go for two because you go for two, guess what? That means you lead by three. So if they hit a field goal, they don't win. Sam Pittman just decided, less than a minute left, let's go ahead and kick the extra point and go up by two because that makes a difference. So.
Right.
I don't know what was going on. I don't think anybody should feel good about that game and that simulation. Hopefully the actual game itself is a little bit different than that.
Yeah, I heard your response. You said you felt dirty for that one. That one felt dirty. I hear you. All right, now, talking about the game we're actually going to see on Saturday, I have been saying it all week. My biggest concern probably has to do with the guy who has accounted for 1,173 yards and 13 touchdowns through three games, Talen Green. Now, in the past, Talen Green has been a little bit erratic, turnover prone at times, whether it be fumbles or interceptions. This year, it feels like he's taken a step. What can you tell me about Talen Green? Do you feel like he's taken another step in his final year of eligibility?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. One thing that Talen was last year, he was good, he was gifted, but he didn't have the confidence, not just in himself, but in his offensive line, the wide receivers. He only had one guy that he really felt confident about. And it just, you could see that there was something there, but just did not have it. Just did not have it for various reasons. And then after, we always hear about, year two under Bobby Petrino, year two under Bobby Petrino. Well, we got to see year two Talen Green under Bobby Petrino, and guess what? It's been pretty good so far. I mean, they've been doing great. And Talen Green is the reason why this team even has success right now. He's going to be the reason they win any games this season. And if he continues to play like he is, I'm not saying he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. I'm not. But he's going to be in the mix. He's going to be in the conversation because he is, I believe at this point in time, he's fourth in the SEC in passing yards, and he is also third in the SEC in rushing yards. Not among quarterbacks, just in general. He is third in the SEC in rushing. He's thrown more touchdown passes than anybody in the SEC, so there's no doubt that he has been that guy. He's been limiting his mistakes compared to last year. He's feeling better about the wide receivers that he's throwing to. Just overall, I mean, you can't be more impressed with what Taylen Green's been able to do so far this year.
Now, when I look at a talent like him, and if I was a defensive coordinator, I'd just say, okay, mix up your coverages, mix up your blitz packages, and hold on to your butts. That's sort of what you have to do with a talent like Taylen Green. But if you were advising Memphis DC Jordan Hankins on ways to limit Taylen Green, what would you tell him? Like, what type of advice would you give on limiting his skill set and limiting the production he can give to you on a Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, there's not really a blueprint, right? It's just a simple thing of getting that one or two plays. Because the thing about Taylen Green is I love Taylen Green. He's a great player, great quarterback. But even then, he still is a guy that if he makes a mistake, especially a turnover, it impacts him. It impacts him. Maybe not as much as it did a year ago, but it still impacts him heavily. So if Memphis or anything, if they just get some sort of play, whether it's an interception, a fumble, turnover on downs, anything, he's going to start wavering a little bit. And because of that fact, that's what's going to put him in a great position. So to me, it's just a matter of can you limit him? Can you get him to have that one play? And if that does happen, then you better get him to have those issues and to not have that confidence, because if he starts losing it and start wavering a little bit, it's going to be hard-pressed for any of the team to believe him either, and that could really cause some problems.
Yep, no doubt. And in the past, he's been a guy who tucks it and runs very quickly. It feels like he's doing a lot more from the pocket. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, no, he's that's what Petrino wants him to do. He wants him to do his check down. He wants him to look for other options, not just, this one wide receiver's not open, take off, run it. No, don't do that. Make it to where you're going through every single read you need to go through, and then you end up taking care of business, because that's something that I think that Taylen can kind of, he's got such athleticism. He wants to utilize it, and Petrino wants to utilize it, but he doesn't want to make it to where he's very one-dimensional. So he's trying to make sure that he gets all that he needs, all the help that he needs, and then ends up making big-time plays. Because if he continues to do that, then Arkansas is going to be in great shape.
Now, it also feels like the Arkansas defense, and I obviously watched them last week against Ole Miss and Trinidad Chambliss, and if it weren't for that fumble at the end of the game, that game goes completely differently. It felt like Taylen Green was on his way to leading that offense for a go-ahead score at the end until that fumble. But the defense struggled in that game, no doubt about it. What have you seen from that defense, and what are their strengths? What are their weaknesses?
So the defense, I'm telling you, they don't have D-line depth. Their D-line is good at the starting position, whether it's Cam Ball, Quincy Rhodes. I think Philip Lee's done some good things. But besides that, it gets tough. They do not have the depth that is needed. The linebacker position is their best position. Xavier Sori and Steven Dix, that's their best group right there. And I honestly truly believe the secondary is improved from a year ago. It is solid. But as Sam Pittman said against Ole Miss, especially there in the first half, it was a problem. And it was a problem because the coaches overcomplicated it. They kept the defensive coaches, as he put it, kept checking off things. He's like, hey, just let the guys play. Let the players play. Let them be football players. Once they made that adjustment, it was much better. But, you know, it's one of those things to where the defense has played pretty well, but it's definitely a weak spot. If Arkansas is going to win games this year, we know the offense has got to cook, but there may be some times where it's going to get in a shootout like it was against Ole Miss. So they got problems. I'm curious to see how they bounce back, because they got embarrassed a little bit last week, and seeing if they, you know, take it personally and then come back out and do big things. But until I see it, I'm not going to believe that this defense is good enough to make any stops. And I know Memphis is a completely different type of team than Ole Miss when it comes to offense, but still, it doesn't matter if you're leaving guys wide open. It's the simple things they got to fix, and they got to fix it quickly.
It's something I've noticed from Travis Williams, something I've noticed that he really likes to do, especially with his secondary, is he plays a lot of man. He plays a fair amount of man, usually like over 50% man coverage in the back end. How much of an issue is that? Like switching up coverages, getting to zone, getting to man, doing things like that? Because it feels like he tries to, until he is taken out of it, he tries to man up and let his defensive backs cook.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what they want. They want it to be where, hey, just bend not break. I know it's cliche to say, but you're just not going to have the NFL talent, the type of players that's going to make stops right and left. You need to have guys that can just step up into certain roles and be good and then do the simple things and then let the offense take it from there. That's what this team is built on. Their identity for Arkansas is just about the offense. Let the offense do offensive things. Let Bobby Petrino cook. Let Taylen Green cook, because they're going to score points. They're going to do that. It's a matter of the defense. Can you just get a couple of stops?
Yep.
You don't have to just shut them out. Just get a few. Just get enough to make the difference. You do that, we're going to win games, and that's their identity. And that's why Sam Pittman was really upset with the game last week, because he truly felt that he was the better team. They were the better team going into that game and felt like they had a great chance to win. But that one quarter made all the difference in the world, and now they got to get back after it and find a way to make it work against Memphis tomorrow.
All right, John, I've told you my biggest concern when it comes to the Memphis side of things and what Arkansas can bring in. That's Taylen Green. When you look at Memphis and you've dove into the numbers, dove into the film, what concerns you on the Arkansas side about this Memphis team and something that they could take advantage of, when playing Arkansas on Saturday?
Now, I hate to be a cop-out answer here, but this is honestly, truly my thing, and maybe you can correct me on it. I feel like this could end up being Memphis's biggest game. Because, I mean, they're at home. They're in Memphis. It's an SEC team. And not to say that they're not going to play better teams or more important teams, but they're 3-0. They're a team that could get into the playoff with the way it's set up right now. This is everything for them. And Arkansas, they had an emotional letdown against Ole Miss. They got Notre Dame coming to town next week. And also, this game being at 11 a.m., it's hard to wake up sometimes. And so, to me, the biggest problem for Arkansas is if they don't take it seriously. Do not take Memphis seriously, and you're going to get beat. Memphis is good enough to beat you. And if they come out fired up, wanting it more, and you come out lollygagging and emotionally drained and blah, 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 you will get beat. And to me, that's the thing. It's not maybe just necessarily a matchup. It's more about if you're not ready and focused in, Memphis is going to beat you and embarrass you, and then you're going to be wandering around sitting at 2-2 with the difficult schedule in front of you. You have to take them seriously. You have to come out fired up. You have to come out ready and focused in, because if not, like I said, Memphis, they're a very good team. They have offense and defense ways that can beat you, and they will beat you if you don't take it seriously. So to me, that's the biggest obstacle for Arkansas.
Yeah, no doubt. But when you look at this Memphis roster, though, I mean, it seems like a very heavy running team. Passing the ball, I don't know if they've opened it up. They've been vanilla. They've played three inferior opponents. So maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe they can open it up a little bit more against Arkansas. But when you look at this Memphis team as a whole, is there anybody in particular you're paying attention to? A Brendan Lewis, a Jamari Hawkins, a Sutton Smith? Like, who do you look at on this Memphis side as guys Arkansas needs to key in on?
Oh, to me, it's Brendan Lewis, because that is the difference for Arkansas and has been really their biggest MO for teams. I know it's so obvious that, yeah, if the other quarterback plays well, it's tough to win. Like, duh. But Arkansas struggles and has struggled time and time and time and time again with quarterbacks like him, guys that he's very effective. You know, if you look at his numbers, it's not like, oh, he's got all these touchdown passes and all this crazy stuff, but the dude's completing over 70% of his passes. Like, he's effective enough to where he can do that. He can beat you with his legs, he can beat you with his arm, and he's going to be fired up. And it's a matter of, can you provide pressure on him? Not to mention the fact that this is a guy that's been playing college football for a very long time. He's experienced. He's been around a lot. And to me, that's been the problem for Arkansas when they've lost a lot of games. Last week, you know, was an exception. We were going up against a different quarterback, but he cooked you, and that was the difference. That was the game. So to me, it's about, can Arkansas's defense do enough against Lewis? Can they just contain him? If they do that, I think they'll be okay. But they have not proven that they know how to handle talented, experienced quarterbacks. Most of the games that Arkansas has won, especially some big games, have usually gone against inexperienced freshman, sophomore-type quarterbacks in their first year starting, and you're not having that with Lewis. He's going to be a guy that's ready to go, and he's not going to be afraid of you. So if you let him get some confidence, especially early and going in the game, you're going to be in trouble, no doubt, defensively.
All right, John, I'm going to throw the ongoing take I've had all week at you, and I want you to let me know if you think I'm misguided or if you think it's correct. I feel if this is a shootout and this gets into the 30s or the 40s, I feel like that favors Arkansas pretty heavily because of Taylen Green and what he can do to really bother a defense. I feel like if this game stays low, And you're in the 20s, I don't know, 24-17, 24-20. That may favor Memphis in the end of the day. How do you feel about that take?
I feel exactly the same way. If it's an ugly game, gross, you know, just low scoring, nasty, I think Memphis wins. I truly do. If it's a shootout, if it's an offensive powerhouse between even both teams, I still think Arkansas ends up pulling it out. I think they end up getting it. But the uglier the game, the lower scoring the game, the worse it is for Arkansas and the better it is for Memphis. And just to me, I don't see Memphis beating Arkansas because they're just unstoppable offensively or anything like that. I think that the best way to beat a team like Arkansas, if you're Memphis, and it's not a slight, it's just reality, because you'll take the win, is just to make it look gross. You know, have some turnovers, have some bad plays, make Taylen Green look bad, you know, just have those types of box scores. You do that, I think Memphis wins, and I think they win pretty easily, too, if they end up getting in an ugly game.
Yeah, now I need a temperature check on Sam Pittman, because it feels like he's been on the hot or the warm seat for the better part of the last 3 years. Arkansas fans, how do they feel about Sam at this moment, and is there a way for him to redeem himself in the eyes of Arkansas fans?
I mean, sure, yeah. If he goes and wins 10 games this year, you know, I mean, it could change a lot. But listen, people like Sam Pittman. Everyone likes Sam Pittman. He's a likable guy, but you got to win. And there's just not the energy surrounding the program like there should be. I think a lot of that's dealing with the AD. I think a lot of it's Pittman, but it's just, he's been here for 6 years now, and he's had one regular season that's been a winning season, one regular season that's been a winning one. Because everyone would be like, oh, well, he won his bowl games. I don't care about that. Bowl games are more meaningless now than ever. So I don't want to hear that. Oh, he went 7-6. No, he went 6-6.
Right.
So the problem is just you're not doing it very well. And also on the other side, when people, Razorback fans, they see Ole Miss doing awesome. They see Missouri winning 10 games. They see South Carolina finding ways to get into the playoff conversation. They're like, hey, they can. Why can't we? And that makes it even worse is when some of the peers or some of the programs that are similar to Arkansas are finding success, but you're not. That makes you look bad. And they're like, okay, well, they're doing all this. What's keeping us from doing it? And they're not getting really many answers. And it's just, there's not that high level of energy. Pittman's not a bad coach by any stretch. But he's also just, he's tough on the smallest things. Arkansas's record under Sam Pittman in one possession is 7-18. That's tough. But if you look back to 2012, ever since Bobby Petrino wrecked that motorcycle as the head coach, Arkansas has 16-42 in one possession games. So it's the little things. It's the little things that makes it from being a great team. Same thing as always. So that's the thing that people get frustrated with Pittman. One possession losses, like, it would be night and day if you just won half of those games you lost, but you haven't. So people are kind of wavering. It's like, hey, do a good job this year, but let's move on. Let's find a different coach. Let's have a new boost of energy here next year.
So that Arkansas program as a whole, I think there's a lot of people around the country that would look at the rest of the SEC and say, well, when it comes to resources and revenue sharing, the amount of money that they can use on a roster, they're just not up to snuff. But do you find that to be true? Because I do look at the donors that consistently give money, Tyson, you know, and otherwise. Like, it feels like there is a lot to unlock there in regards to being maybe a top half fundraising team in the SEC. How do you feel about that? Is that the truth, or do you feel like they're lagging behind the rest of the SEC in that realm?
No, they're lagging behind the SEC, and it's because they haven't embraced NIL. They haven't embraced the way of doing it. And I don't care what anybody says. Razorback fans, at the end of the day, you could sit here and be like, oh, well, we're doing it because we have integrity. We're not going to go and do this other stuff. It's like, Razorback fans are like, we don't care. Just win. Like, don't tell us. Just win. That's all we care about. So if you have to go and do some shady stuff, hey, don't tell us about it. Just do it because we want to win. And here's my thing. It's like, if everybody else is doing it and there's no consequences to everybody else doing it, because there's not. The NCAA is not doing anything, then is it really cheating? If there's no consequences and everyone else is doing it, it's not cheating. It's just
right.
It's just the way it is. So I think they could be set up if they had the right people in place, but they don't. And I think that might be changing here soon. And when they do, there's no reason why Arkansas can't be great. Because you got John Tyson and John Calipari hanging out. You know, like, they got the money. They got people that is willing to do it. It's just you have to be able to push the limits and push the envelope to make that happen. And until they have somebody that's willing to do it, it's just going to be the way it is.
Yeah, does this fall back into Sam Pittman's lap to a certain extent? Like, when it comes to talking to donors, getting out there, discussing things with the higher-ups in the athletic department, trying to really push the envelope. Is that been an issue for Sam Pittman, or is that just sort of an organizational athletic department issue?
I think it's an organizational department issue. Now, Sam Pittman doesn't help it, you know, because he's just a coach. He just wants to coach. I don't blame him for it. But you almost got to be a little bit of a politician. You got to have people believe in
absolutely.
You and believe that you're the guy. And so he just – but that's not him. He just wants to coach, which here's my thing. If Sam Pittman was a head coach in college football 10 years ago, I think he would be an absolutely outstanding head coach, because he's about relationships. He's about building that with the kids. And that would have worked 10 years
ago. But that ain't what it is anymore, John. How much money can you give me?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's not who he is. That's not what he does. And that's what's unfortunate, is just timing on his part.
Yeah. All right. Now, while I have you, I'll let you roll right after this. No, you're a busy man. But when you look at the SEC so far this year, I think it's pretty similar to the way it's been the last 2 years, where you're going to have some parity. You're going to have some cannibalism. I think even at the bottom of the conference, you have some teams that are very capable. Kentucky played close with Ole Miss. You have Mississippi State, who a lot of people thought were going to be the worst team in the SEC. They're at home beating the number 12 team in the country, Arizona State. But at the top of the conference, it doesn't feel like there's anybody right now that I'm very confident in, you know, separating themselves, being that number one team in the SEC. As you sort of look at it, how do you feel about the top teams in the SEC and how that will all shake out by the end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are opportunities for other teams to step up. I mean, Texas does not look good at all. I know that they have enough talent to be good, but they haven't looked good.
Has the Arch thing just blew your mind, by the way? Just real quick.
I mean, not really.
Okay.
Not really,
okay.
How many times do we always just set people up as this next savior of everything, and it actually works out before they even play? Like,
right.
Very seldom does that happen. And so, Texas hasn't looked great. Georgia hasn't looked great. LSU looks beatable. It's not that – I mean, they look impressive, but they're not just this dominating force. And so, you know, who knows? Like, I mean, Ole Miss could be that team. You know, Vanderbilt's over here doing crazy things. It could be them. You know, it's just there's so much going on. Texas A&M is another team. Beat Notre Dame. Like, they could be that team. So if you're one of those teams lower in the SEC, you got to feel like this is your best chance to take something this year. And I think it might end up being that way. I think you may see a team that – either wins the SEC or makes it to the playoff that hadn't been in that situation before.
And does it kind of feel like the top of the sports that way, too? Because I even look at the Big Ten, and I believe Ohio State's going to be there at the end of the year, Penn State, Oregon. But, like, none of those teams have been all that convincing, because I look at that Ohio State win against Texas. That has not aged very well, John. That one doesn't look that great at this moment,
no.
Considering what we know about Arch Manning. And then Penn State hasn't played anybody, and they haven't looked that convincing. Oregon genuinely hasn't played anybody. It is kind of wild. Oklahoma State's nobody, but they are at this point. They got 69 hung on them by Oregon. But, like, I think that's kind of a microcosm what we're seeing in the SEC of the entire country. It doesn't feel like there's anybody out there that's really ready to separate at this moment. And I know it's still early in the season.
I know. And that's what's crazy. It's like everybody's just kind of in wait-and-see mode. Like, nobody knows who's good. Nobody knows what it is. And we'll figure it out, and they'll play the games. But it's all the more reason why Razorback fans get frustrated, because they're like, hey, we're not like so far behind everybody else. We're right there. We can do this. So it's a wild thing. And I think it's awesome, especially for smaller teams. But it's also, you know, I feel like at the end of the day, it's still going to be like Ohio State and Georgia in the title game or something like that. So
right.
It'll be all for naught. But it is fun, and it makes the sport a lot more fun.
Well, I do need to ask before I let you go. Are you going to make it to Memphis this weekend?
Tomorrow? I am not.
Okay,
no,
okay.
I went to Oxford. I went to Oxford already, and I gotta do some stuff around here, man. But, I wish I could, but unfortunately I won't be able to.
I got you. Well, John, I appreciate it, man. Great stuff.
Hey, appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Have a good weekend. He is.
You as well.
He is John Neighbors, owner of Inside Arkansas, also host of Locked On Razorbacks for the Locked On Network. If you want to follow him on X, it's at the John Neighbors Show. Now we need to go ahead and transition into the Blitz, and in the Blitz today we have Syracuse head coach Fran Brown sending a warning to schools trying to poach his players. He's threatened them with physicality. We'll talk about that on the other side. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
All right, Gabe, Syracuse head coach Fran Brown sends warning to schools trying to poach his players. Here's what he had to say. I don't care but don't let me find out, and then I'll see you. Because I ain't no B. Like, I'm going to come at you. Like, what's up? I'm going to see you.
So he's basically threatening other coaches that try to poach his players with a physical altercation. Is that how I'm supposed to take this? Connor, that's what it sounds like. Listen, I like Fran Brown. I think he is a coach that relates to his players well. He did a good job in the portal last year. They won 10 games at Syracuse. He's done a heck of a job at Syracuse. This year, they had to turn over the roster. It was a rebuilding year, yada, yada, yada. We can talk about that all we want. But what a dumb comment. You're not – if Kirby Smart comes in and takes your starting corner, you're not going to say it's on site and then meet him with physicality the next time you see him at a coaching convention. Okay, like, this is just ridiculous. I what do you mean, Fran? Please let me know what you mean by this. You're not fighting any coaches because they take some of your players. Because it's inevitable, too, that they're going to take some of your players. You don't have the same amount of money as the top of the sport. So if you have a player that you've developed and they're good, they will go elsewhere. That's just how today's day and age works. But I just found this really corny and weird to say it's on site. It's on site if I see one of these coaches that took one of my players. Get the hell out of here.
Well, do you also – this is also a bit silly for no coach is going to be like, I really like that guy at Syracuse, but Coach Brown said it's on site if I take his
guy. It's too much of a threat. They're not going to take his guy.
It's too much of a threat that he's going to belly bump me and we're going to be – like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. At ACC media days, if next year, if Mike Norvell takes your starting D tackle, what are you going to do? Are you going to bump up against him? And
I'm also a big fan of Fran Brown. Him making his team run after a win is hysterical.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of my favorite things to happen in college football this year.
What made me mad about that? What made me mad about that is people, there was some of us, in the older college football crowd, we're like, well, he's holding them accountable. He's an old school guy. And no, it's just stupid to make people run after a college football
game. I think it's hilarious.
I mean, it's hilarious, but it's also just corny and embarrassing to show up your players like that after a game. I find it ridiculous. That's not what that is. You shouldn't do that.
Oh, you took it as showing up the players.
Yeah, don't do that. That's just corny. That's something we do that in middle school. We maybe do that in high school. You don't do that. Once you get to college football, it's too high of a level.
Is it a try-hard type of move by a coach?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all about theatrics, you know, and I just don't.
Performative coaching?
Yeah, I don't think it sends any type of message that's good to his players or to the fan base by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you have a story about you winning a game and just getting ripped into in the locker room by a coach?
Sure. I guess it was my junior year. We played Southern Illinois, an FCS team, and they took a lead into half. I think that was probably the most animated I've seen. I saw Mike Norvell in my entire time at the University of Memphis. But like the running and the real ripping into that happens, whether it's a win or a loss, happens on that Sunday when you go in and you run and you do your corrections. That's when you should do that.
Oh, I bet those days suck.
Oh, they're horrible. They're absolutely horrible. We had my first O-line coach under Fuente at the University of Memphis. When we had penalties, instead of like doing sprints or running, doing 55s, 110s, he would make us lay on our side and roll 55 yards. And he knew, and here's the thing that really bothered me. He knew we got liquored up the night before, especially after a win. Like, he absolutely knew we were out at Silky's till 2 a.m. And so he'd make us roll. And, like, I'm telling you, every Sunday, if you had a penalty, you knew you were going to be throwing up, yakking all over the field because you were going to be dizzy as hell from rolling across it. Because he knew it was cruel and unusual, but he knew what he was doing to get in our heads. And maybe he probably was doing that to try to make us be a little safer and smarter on Saturday night after a win or a loss. But yeah,
that's incredible. That's incredible. I'm not going to make you all run. I'm going to make you roll. Yes. 55 yards.
Yes. Because running would have been too easy. You know what I mean?
Rolling was more difficult.
Not from a physical exertion standpoint, but from a mental standpoint, like eons harder. Not even.
It was psychological warfare.
Like, brother, I'm still hung over from the night before, and you have me rolling across this field sideways.
Your
Some guys don't get bothered
off.
By it, but my equilibrium was way off. Dehydrated as hell. I'm dry heaving by the time I get to the other side of the field. It was tough.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. I wish there was footage of that.
I'm glad there isn't. I'm very glad there isn't.
Wake Up Barstool has been on FS1 for 2 weeks now, and the ratings are rough.
They're rough. Now, okay, I will shoot some bail off the top in the sense that I don't think Fox Sports added Barstool and Barstool personalities strictly for linear TV. I think they brought them in because of their social media presence and how many hits they get on that. I think that was a big part of the contract that was signed. Now, while I say that, I don't think by any stretch of the imagination, Fox Sports thought that these television ratings would be as low as they are. Connor, week one, 20,000 on Tuesday for the first show. 13,000 on Wednesday and Thursday for the second and third show, and then 20,000 on a Friday. And then this week, they had 23,000 on a Monday, and it got as low as 7,000 viewers on Tuesday for their morning show. Their average so far, rating, 12,000 viewers. Just to make it very clear, The Herd, who's also on FS1, Colin Cowherd, and First Things First with Nick Wright and Chris Broussard, they scored every single day over 100,000 viewers.
Oh, so those are very
so
different.
Like these,
very different.
These numbers that they're getting on linear TV are beyond abysmal. Like, there, it's almost as if no one's watching. That's what it is. So I know that Fox Sports hired Barstool personalities and Dave Portnoy for a different look, to be on social media more, to bring in their audience that's very much online. But there is no way in hell Fox Sports looks at these numbers and says this has been successful. This has been wildly unsuccessful so far.
I think it's one of those examples where the internet and social media does not always translate to real life. When they made this deal with Barstool, we said they better be careful, because I don't think that the casual sports fan that is tuning in to want to learn about sports, watch highlights, hear topics of debate every once in a while, not all the time, I don't think that they want to listen to the Barstool shtick. Barstool is a certain type of way you talk about sports, and I just don't think it's for everybody. So it's no surprise to me that their show is struggling. I also think that just getting into bed with Dave Portnoy right now is not the best of deals.
Yeah.
I just don't understand the draw of Dave Portnoy whatsoever. Again, in
some of the talent at Barstool, sure.
Absolutely. Some of the people at Barstool,
Dave,
I think are pretty good. Dave is not one of them. You know, his politics aside, he's just wrong about sports almost every time he opens his mouth. Almost
and
every time he opens his mouth.
And he's not a football analyst.
No.
He's not.
No.
It's not what he does.
He cares about gambling above all else.
Yeah. So I never understood it.
And but, pizza reviews.
But, like, can we be honest about these numbers? These are, like, microscopic. These are, I mean, they barely even register. 7,000 on a Tuesday?
That's crazy. That's crazy.
7,000. I mean, that just blows my mind. And I guess the Monday shows are higher. They had 20,000 on the first show when Dave Portnoy is on, and then Mondays is Dave Portnoy's day, and it was 23,000 this week. So when Dave's on, it's slightly higher, but it's not even close to what Fox should be reaching for and striving for. If the Herd and First Things First are getting over 100,000, I'm sure that they thought it would be at least somewhere close to that. 23,000 is your most watched show? That's a fifth of what you're getting on your other show. That's insane. And you got rid of other shows that were performing way better. Now, I didn't really like those shows, The Facility and Breakfast Ball, and I wasn't a fan of those shows. But they quintupled the viewership and the TV ratings that Wake Up Barstool has gotten since they've joined the network.
You've been talking about Nebraska and Michigan all this week and asking our guests if Nebraska will be back after this weekend. So I'll ask you, will Nebraska be back after this weekend?
No. Now, here's the thing. Even if they do win, I don't think you could call them back. They're facing a true freshman quarterback at home, a Michigan team that we don't really know where they're going to be by the end of the year. They're 21st in the country. They have some holes. And, like, when you look down the rest of Nebraska's schedule, there's still places that they could slip up. You have USC. You're going to have to deal with Penn State later in the year. Iowa could give you some trouble. But their schedule's generally easy. But, like, just to one win over Michigan does not make you think that Nebraska's back. When I think Nebraska's back, I think of the 90s when they were competing and in the conversation for national titles. That's what back for Nebraska would mean. But I don't even think they're going to win this game, Connor. I really don't. I think that Bryce Underwood learned a lot from his first road game, true road game, at Oklahoma. I thought the defense did a good job of at least trying to keep them in that game, even though on the other side you had John Mateer, a really talented quarterback. But here's the thing. I think seeing is believing with Nebraska when it comes to a top 25 matchup and winning something like that and being able to get through four quarters unscathed. Nebraska is 0-27 in their last 27 games against ranked opponents.
That's insane.
They haven't beaten a top 25 team since 2016. So, like, that trend is just so heavy. I'm not gonna make a prediction that Nebraska is gonna win this game until they actually win it. Truthfully,
do you think Nebraska, if they don't win this one against Michigan, the next we are back opportunity would be USC? Could they pull it off against USC?
Maybe. I don't know.
It's at home.
Let me see this game and I'll be able to get a feel for what they look like the rest of the year. Because the truth of the matter is they've played Cincy, barely beat Cincy, and I don't think Cincy's a good team.
Well, and to be quite honest, Cincinnati just
Brennan Soresby
threw the ball away.
Literally was awful.
Your infield goal range, and he's like, nah, I'm going to take a shot.
Screw it. Yeah,
why?
Screw it.
Why?
So barely won that game.
You thought Mahomes was still there.
They beat Akron, and they played Houston Christian. So this is like the first time they're actually seeing a team with, in my opinion, a real pulse. So I don't think they're going to win. I don't think we're going to be talking about Nebraska being back. I do think Dylan Raiola is a talented quarterback. We'll be talking about him the rest of the year. But I just, until you break a trend of 0 of your last 27 against ranked opponents, I'm not going to pick you to win. Right? Like, you have to break that trend before I sit up here and say you're going to win that ball game.
Do you think the comparisons of Nebraska and Tennessee are appropriate?
Yeah, I think for the most part, although Tennessee's gotten back to where they need to be.
Yes. Feels like Tennessee
quicker.
Football is back.
Way quicker. So, and they've stayed there with Josh.
I mean, they made it to the college football playoff. Tennessee's back.
I will say, like, I think Matt Rhule is the guy who gives Nebraska the best shot in this run of coaches.
Completely agree.
But will it get to where Tennessee has been under Heupel? I don't know. But I think, like, I more so than those programs, I would compare the fan bases.
Okay.
Because you had a lot of success in the 90s, won some national titles. You feel like you should be there, even though you've had these low down moments that show you that, yeah, in the 90s, we've shown that we have the type of program that can win a national title, but we've also seen that we can go 4-8 pretty easily with the wrong leadership in place.
Is there a sleeping giant aspect to Nebraska at all with just the amount of money that they could get from their boosters, where they are, the history there?
If they were still in the Big 12, yes, I'd say that.
Uh-huh.
They're in the Big 10. Everybody else has money. They have a great fan base, and they have a decent amount of money rolling through that program. I actually, like, in high school, I visited them, and I saw their campus and their facilities, and it's beautiful. It's state-of-the-art. I think they've updated it recently, too. Like, it's great. But, like, the Big Ten, you have a lot of teams that just have naturally more resources than you, right? Oregon. I think when you look at Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan has more than you. You know, you keep going down. USC has more natural resources than you at Nebraska. So, like, if they were in a different conference, I'd say they're a sleeping giant. But I don't know if in the Big Ten I can really give them that. It just feels like they're dealing with more from their peers than they did previously in their program's history. But that will do it for the Blitz. One more segment left of the day. Let's go ahead and get to weekend winners when we return. The picks that you don't ask for, but I give anyway, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
And for weekend winners on 92.9 FM ESPN's Gabe Kuhn Show, brought to you by FanDuel.
You know how it goes, the picks that you don't ask for, but you get anyway on the season. We did with 3 picks every single week in college football, 3 picks in the NFL. 500, 9-9. Now, in college football, I'm a little better, 7-5. NFL, I'm 2-4. But last week, 4-2 on my picks. So, it's kind of been an up-and-down season, but I think this week is
You're
where I'm
trending
really
up.
I think this is trending up. This is where I take advantage. I'm going to start with Tulane plus 12 at Ole Miss. Second start for Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss. And I know how good he looked against Arkansas. I completely understand that. It makes a lot of sense to think that he could do that against a Tulane defense that's from the group of six. Smaller bodies, not as athletic. But at the same time, that Tulane defense is pretty solid. And John Sumrall is a defensive head coach, so he's going to have a good game plan. And I think largely Trinidad Chambliss was good in that Arkansas game, but I think he was really good because Arkansas had no film on the guy. They didn't know if he was going to start or not. Lane Kiffin made it seem like Austin Simmons was going to play all week until Trinidad Chambliss rolled out there and started playing the game. Well, you know what Tulane has? They have film on Trinidad Chambliss from last week. So they can look at it, decipher what he does well, what he doesn't do well, and create a game plan around him. They know he's playing. So I truly believe that Tulane will cover this line. And offensively, Ole Miss struggled with Taylen Green's legs. Jake Retzlaff has been running the ball.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Really well so far this year, and he can use his arm. He's not Taylen Green, no, but he gives you at least a semblance of that same skill set. So I'm taking Tulane plus the points. Don't think they win, but I certainly think they cover. Then I'm going to go to Utah, -3.5 versus Texas Tech. Truth of the matter is, it's a clashing of styles. Texas Tech has all the transfers in the world. They've paid all the money possible for their roster. Utah, yeah, they have a transfer quarterback who's been playing really well in Devin Dampier. But they're very physical, and they have a lot of continuity. And to me, until I am proven otherwise, I'm going to go with continuity and understanding and physicality over a transfer portal laden team that is here in their fourth game of the season. So Utah minus 3.5 is my second pick. And my final pick, I'm just going to go with trends. Talked about them already in the last segment. But Nebraska is 0-27 in their last 27 against ranked opponents. Michigan's ranked 21st. I'm going to take Michigan minus the 1.5. Sorry to Nebraska fans. I will feel bad for you when Nebraska wins that game. Or when Michigan wins that game. Now to the NFL. I'm going to take Bears plus 1 against the Cowboys. I think they finally win a ball game. The Cowboys' defense has not looked good. In fact, they gave up 450 yards passing to Russell Wilson and the Giants. I feel like the Bears can find something. I know that Caleb Williams and that offense haven't looked great yet, but I feel like this is a good opportunity against a really bad defense to make something go. Then I'm going to go Colts minus 4.5 at Titans. This is really a challenge to my guy Connor Dunning here. I think that the Colts will cover and win, start 3-0. Daniel Jones has another good game. I don't know when we can call him Indiana Jones, but Connor is holding out on that. He is holding out on that. I'm going to take the Colts minus 4.5 at the Titans. And then finally, I'm going to go Steelers minus 1.5 at the Pats. Steelers coming off a really bad week offensively. But really the reason they lost last week to the Seahawks is because of the Caleb Johnson misunderstanding of the kickoff rules. It landed in the landing zone. He let it go like it was college. It stayed in bounds, and the Seahawks go down there and get a free touchdown because he did not field the kickoff. So I'm going to take the Steelers minus 1.5. I think that Aaron Rodgers could get back closer to what he did in week 1. But that is going to be a wrap for today and a wrap for the week. We have a lot going on this weekend, including in town, 11 a.m., Arkansas versus Memphis and Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. If you're watching from home, it'll be on ABC. But thanks for listening all week. Thanks to my wonderful guests today, John Neighbors, Lee Sterling, and David Cobb, for their contribution to today's show. We'll meet back here at the same time on Monday. In the meantime, let's go ahead and pass you off to Amber and Ian. They will follow me. For Connor, I'm Gabe Beasy. Be safe and enjoy your weekend.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.